Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Welcome to the broadcast, everybody. Good to have you with us. It's Monday, April 23rd, and I'm broadcasting live from the MBA Technology Conference here in Phoenix, Arizona. I've been fortunate to get some excellent interviews with some of the top technology folks here, and I'll be playing those later in the broadcast during the Hot Topic segment. So you'll definitely want to stay tuned to the broadcast all the way through and listen to some of the things that are going on. Very informative, some great information, and I think you'll enjoy that part of it, especially if you're interested in technology. What have we been saying all along? Technology is the key to managing risk, and there's some great innovative ideas that you will want to hear about later in the broadcast. By the way, for those of you who tuned in last week or to last week's broadcast, you obviously heard the audio issues that we were having with our special guest, Jack Guttentag, better known as the Mortgage Professor. We apologize for those. We identified what the problem was. Jack was on the speakerphone on his end. We didn't know that. And I don't know if I forgot to tell him or not, but anyway, it was causing for feedback and a lot of echo, and we apologize for that. So it was frustrating for all of us to have that, because I was really interested in hearing what Jack had to say. We're going to have him back again on the program another time, and I look forward to that segment. Going on in the markets, let's take a turn, our focus and attention to the markets. Each and every week, our good friends at MBS Quoteline bring us an update of what's going on. And Joe Farr, it's good to have you be on the broadcast again. What do you have for us today? What's happening, Joe?
Hi, Dave. Hey, today we opened up higher. We started out about 6:30 seconds above where we ended the day on Friday, and we've pretty well held that so far today. Stocks, though, have opened lower and have held that too. They're down about 140 points. And you know, a lot of what drove the prices this morning and it's held so far is what's gone on in Europe over the weekend. There were three things that I wanted to kind of bring up about that. One is the French election. President Sarkozy is now looking like he might not get reelected. He came in second out of a bunch of people, which means he and a liberal candidate will be vying for the presidency in a runoff in May. But what that election showed is that people in France are weary of austerity, and that popped up in the Netherlands as well, Dave. The budget talks that were going on in the Netherlands had a lot to do with how to get their GDP to, you know, debt to GDP ratio in line with what the European Union had advised was the appropriate level. And they're quite frankly not able to find a way to get there so far. And the current government has resigned. So they're going to be putting in a new government soon. And then the third thing that came out over the weekend was some pretty weak measures out of Spain. And we've talked about Spain a lot lately, where Spain is struggling with its austerity measures. And you add that to a weak economy, and it really does make things tough on the people there. So, you know, all this just shows how painful it is to do things, to change things, to eliminate the addictions that you've learned to appreciate over time. And, yeah, quite frankly, it seems like something we ought to take a lesson from, in that, you know, we're on a path where it's going to be painful someday when we really have to change things. So would like to see things start moving before it gets too painful. And you know, an interesting look will be the recall election in Wisconsin, where Scott Walker is subject to being recalled. And that's a situation where he tried to eliminate some pain early before it got too bad. So anyway, we'll see what goes on there. Excuse me. Now, as it relates to last week, it was really a pretty quiet week. And we went into that week knowing that there were a couple Spanish debt auctions that had caused a good bit of concern beforehand, but as it turned out, they were received well, surprisingly strong demand, so it wasn't a big deal. And then in the U.S., we had a good bit of economic data, and it just about everything that came out a little weaker than expected and not quite as good as last month. So it wasn't bad data, but it just wasn't as good as what people were thinking. And it was true of retail sales. It was true of the New York Empire Index and the Philly Fed Index. It was true of housing starts and existing home sales. Industrial production was flat, same as last month, so no growth and no growth 2 months in a row. And then the jobless claims were a little higher than expected. And so all that, although it was not encouraging economic news, it wasn't terrible economic news, and the earnings that were posted by the various companies that were identifying first quarter earnings helped the stock market do all right, and mortgage rates just didn't change much at all last week. Now, this week, we've got the Fed meeting, and the Fed meeting, the weak data that came out last week, not weak, but not as good as expected data that came out last week, is that going to have an impact on the Fed? I don't know. What about Europe? You know, the Fed seeing that things are really starting to get serious in Europe, and so is there anything they're going to try to do to get in front of that? Well, at 12:30 Eastern time on Wednesday, they should issue their statement, and then there'll be a news conference following that at 2:15 Eastern. So it'd be a very important time to be involved with the market at that time. This week, housing starts comes out. They come out tomorrow. New home sales comes out later in the week. New home sales come out tomorrow. Pending home sales comes out on Thursday. Sorry about that. Durable orders on Tuesday, and then the first look at first quarter GDP comes out on Friday. That's usually a big event. Consensus is for a 2.5% growth rate for the first quarter. That's compared to a 3% growth rate in the fourth quarter. And then that week will be rounded out with Treasury auctions on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So that's about it for the economic side of things and market rate side of things. So send it back to you.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoteline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoteline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market, whether you're in the office or on the road. See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteline.com to start a risk-free 2-week trial. MBSQuoteline.com. 646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Hi, everyone. This is Alice Alvey here giving you the legislative update. And, it was interesting as I took a look at trying to figure out what were the latest changes in the proposed rules out there. I decided to go to the alphabetical headings that were being presented on the Federal Register website, and I noticed there were a lot more fun headings than there were besides mortgages, right? So as I'm looking down this list, I'm going, wow, there's 770 plus titles here. And I saw that there was a heading for beer. And I thought, you know, it would be a lot more fun to track proposed rules about beer or peanuts or nectarines. I think every kind of fruit was listed out there, and they all have rules in the Federal Register. And so anyway, I stuck with my task and made sure I focused on the mortgage ones. But
They're not going to eliminate beer, are they?
It's
not an unhealthy product, is it?
Right. We have to get hooked on a different proposed rule, right? After listening to your mm-hmm. thing about getting hooked on certain things. Yeah, we definitely have things we're hooked on, right? So anyway, a couple of reminders. One I want to start with is that there is an advance notice of proposed rulemaking. So these are the ones that are a little less firm, don't have an effective date out there for you, but definitely it's a comment period that's worth taking a look at. So another rule from FinCEN, the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. We talked about this a month ago, but I just need to revisit it with all of you so that you realize we're just a couple of weeks away here before this comment period expires. So we all now will be following an anti-money laundering rule as lenders. Banks have always had the Bank Secrecy Act and anti-money laundering rules. So this new proposal is trying to take a component of that customer due diligence, where under BSA and AML, a bank is supposed to really have policies in place to make sure they understand who their customer is. Well, what FinCEN is proposing here is to take anyone subject to BSA and AML, which, okay, lenders, that we're getting looped into that, so whether this is going to apply to us or not is up for discussion. And they're trying to ask, should we take this CDD, Customer Due Diligence Regulation, and make it its own standalone component? Basically, take it out of BSA where it's gray, it's been interpreted over the years, and FinCEN feels it's not getting enough attention, so they want it to be its own rule. And the main thing I would say, if I'm a lender right now, I'm going to get in there and comment and just make sure they say, if you're going to go down this road, the first step has to be that it's only for the bankers who already have experience with BSA, AML, and of course that ruling meaning you have to file SAR reports. Lenders are only just getting into developing policies and procedures to be able to follow SAR reports. That's going to be a new ball game. It's going to take a year at least. You're going to have to get your procedures down now, get everybody trained, get that in place by August 5th. But it's going to take you a year of developing the systems, really starting to learn to see what kind of things are going to rise to the surface that your staff's going to flag you on, and learning what of those things that get flagged actually have to become a SAR, you know, developing all your follow-up procedures. There's no way they should have lenders on this CDD. So if you say, well, I don't know what customer due diligence means in the first place, and I'm a lender and I want to make sure this thing doesn't apply to me, that's a short comment to get into the Federal Register before May 4th at the very least. Now, from the banking side, yeah, go ahead, John.
I just wanted to add in that people need to understand just how serious filing those SARs are, and to not do so is a huge risk. In fact, you're almost better off filing way too many. Don't challenge should I, should I not. If you have any question, you should, as far as my experience was.
Yeah, and I agree, and that's why it's going to be a process. One of the things that came out from a training session that we've been sharing with folks is the idea that you really need to develop a form and talk to your staff at a very basic level on things that can happen in a loan file, where get the staff filling in the forms, like you said. I'd rather have you over-report to the compliance officer, and then again, as a new compliance officer looking at SARs, again, over-reporting, having to learn what information you have to provide. You know, the idea that you don't have to think it's going to hold up in court to file it, just file it. And that's up to FinCEN to see if all the names and the parties involved tie into anything else. But, you know, that's just exactly my point. This is such a big deal, the SAR reporting, that to put on another layer of customer due diligence when we're just learning the basic SAR component itself, to me, is an awful lot of regulation at one time. So take a good hard look at it. To Joe's point, this is very, very serious in the eyes of FinCEN. They are catching a lot of criminals with this information that's getting reported. So take a look at it. Maybe you're not opposed to it. Now, if you're a banker and you're saying, I've already got a component of this, maybe this is getting not a lot of attention on the banker side because they're thinking, well, they're just going to expand what I'm doing already. For lenders, this is a new thing. Get your voice heard out there. All right, so that's got to be due by May 4th. Here are the legislation that I'm watching. The Mortgage Forgiveness Tax Relief Acts are starting to surface. There's a couple of versions of a couple House bills and now a Senate bill, and this is trying to propose to get an early start on extending the principal forgiveness being extending the principal forgiveness window that we have right now where principal forgiveness is not taxable. So the IRS principal forgiveness not being taxed, that exemption is good now until the end of this year, and a couple legislators are trying to get out in front of that and make sure that that goes on until 2015. So we'll see what happens. Obviously, it's hard to know what's going to move ahead of an election year. But a little bit of a note here on how GovTracks handles this. I thought it was interesting that they thought Senate Bill 2250, the Mortgage Forgiveness Tax Relief Act, actually had a 26% chance of being enacted. Now, that's a big chance. Some of them are down at 3, and they thought 6 was good because the co-sponsor is a ranking member of a committee to which the bill is being referred. There's at least one co-sponsor from the majority party and one co-sponsor outside of the majority party. So I thought it was interesting how they ranked that. It really all depends on who presents the bill and who's sponsoring it. So we'll watch that for you. Next up on my list in terms of bills is FHA's House Bill 4246, and just in general trying to watch for FHA, MIP-related, and FHA solvency bills. Over the weekend, and Joe brought this to my attention, I saw it on National Mortgage News here just before we started the show, that Romney was talking about shutting down FHA, and that's crazy. So I guess there was quite an outpouring, National Mortgage News was reporting, and we all obviously see the benefit of FHA, but clearly we need to make our voices heard more, much louder to Congress so that they understand the importance of FHA in the housing market today. Also, so we're watching the Loan Originator Compensation Bill. Another one was introduced, trying to kind of close up a loophole for borrower-only and lender-only compensation. That doesn't have much of a chance of passing. Needless to say, when you talk about mortgage originators in a bill right now and talk about loosening things, it's not getting much attention. We are definitely, I know MBA is watching to make sure that we don't see any cram down legislation for bankruptcy cram downs making its way forward. And then also on the FHA front, the seller concession rule, we have not heard anything yet. You know, FHA has got to give us some guidance pretty soon on this. Leaving that continually hanging out there is a little disconcerting. We did have MIP increases go into effect just on April 9th, but the FHA collection account and disputed accounts rule did get postponed till July 1st. Now, listen to the show regularly because I don't believe it's going to come out in its same form on July 1st. They have so much they have to fix in that rule, especially related to disputed accounts. For those of you who aren't familiar, just very quickly, FHA, one of the things they looked at with the disputed accounts was that they were concerned about an increase in consumers who file a disputed account in order to make their credit score better. And that seemed to be one of the challenges to why they wanted to clamp down a little bit on disputed accounts. And so we really don't think the collection accounts should be looped in as tightly as they have been. We're hoping for some big changes. I know MBA is working on that and talking to HUD about it as well. So, last but not least, I already mentioned August 5th. Don't forget, you don't lose sight of that day. And those of you on the loan delivery side, we have the ULDD up running now, but your drop-dead date is going to be July 23rd. So hopefully your first deliveries under the new portals are working smoothly starting now. So get working on that. Look at your timelines at the Fannie and Freddie websites and make sure you're on track. So that's my report as of today, and I think now we're going to move to a commercial break because I took so long.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin.
Good to have you be with us, everybody. As I mentioned earlier, we are here at the MBA Tech Conference and having the privilege to interview some of the top IT professionals in the industry. I'd like to introduce you my next guest, Michael Hammond of Next Level Advisors. Michael, good to have you here with us.
David, it's a pleasure to be here. I couldn't be more excited to be with you and your listeners. There's a lot of great things happening out there, and thank you for having me.
Let's get into some of the things. You are, you know, a lot of people say I'm stuck in my office, and a lot of IT execs that are going to be listening to this are stuck in their office. They don't have that crow's nest view of the industry, and you do. You see the things. You're working with companies across the country, Michael. What are some of the things that you're seeing that are really exciting, that are exciting you as a technologist?
Well, and Dave, I think probably one of the biggest shifts that I'm seeing, a lot of people talk social media, and I think one of the challenges with a lot of the vendors who serve financial services companies struggle with, well, I sell B2B. How does that really apply to what it is my business does? And what I try to counsel them on is the tipping point has already happened.
Yep.
Borrowers, the end consumer, are already online. They're mobile. They're social. There's 750 on Facebook. There's 150 million on Twitter. How many are on LinkedIn?
Right.
How many are in Google Plus? That is where today's borrower and the future borrower is going to be, online and mobile. What really the technology vendors have to focus on is not just using social media so that they can market or sell their products. What they have to realize is the tipping point is going to happen, and I believe it's already starting to happen, for lenders are going to demand these social tools.
And when you're talking about the tipping point, for those that are not familiar with the book, go Google the book. It's a great book on marketing. It really explains the dynamic. But what you're talking about on the tipping point is when there's a mass adoption, when the whole shift goes into really focusing on, expand on that, the tipping point, what's going on.
Perfect. So when I say tipping point, the borrowers are online. Lenders now are realizing that if they're going to continue to do mortgages, if they're going to continue to build up deposits, whatever it may be from a financial institution, the borrowers are online. So the tipping point is the lenders are demanding now these social tools. And if the vendors don't understand and build up that knowledge and don't start applying, whether it's Facebook integration, whether it's Twitter integration, into their tools, they're going to get left in the dust.
So how is the most effective way for that to happen, Michael?
I think the first tip is companies have to start using these social tools themselves.
Right.
Start getting a knowledge base. Start getting familiar with it. Understand how these different networks work. And then start applying those principles to how can you incorporate that into your solution.
Right.
If you have a CRM, there should be some social hooks.
Right.
If you have an online point-of-sale tool, even if you're delivering docs, so many companies, or I should say so many borrowers, are now giving recommendations online. Their friends are looking at those recommendations. They're looking for what opinions are people giving for a lender. All of those type of tools and mechanisms now have to start being incorporated into all of these products, or these vendors are going to really get left behind.
Let's talk about steps. A lot of people go, you know what, I know I got to do that. What are the first steps they can take, Michael?
First step is you have to create awareness, and what most people have is they don't have a knowledge base in-house.
It's a knowledge base you were talking about.
It's a knowledge base, so whether it's contacting Next Level Advisors, whether it's finding another advisor who understands social media, and more importantly, its impact on financial institutions and on the vendor community, go and get some help.
You're not just a technology guy. You do know technology. You know it very well. But you also know the business, practical business applications of how to get it implemented in an effective way.
So many people don't market anything on LinkedIn. All they think of it is a network to, I can job search, and if I ever need a job, I can get on LinkedIn. So we try to build that awareness with a very short assessment to say, here are the five, here are the 10 steps you need to take to follow down that path. And then you've got to analyze and say, okay, what are the hooks within your product offering that would make the most sense for a social, you know, that's why I gave some of the instances. If you have CRM, and you don't have Facebook integration, you don't have Twitter integration, you don't have Google Plus integration, you're missing it.
Right.
Even a lot of the companies that get picked up in the media, that get covered, they don't have any social way to share that.
Wow. That's just astounding to me that in this age that we don't have more people using these tools.
And most of these tools are free. You still have to have some expertise. I understand that, and you still have to take some time. But I think the biggest thing is most of the people that struggle with social media, with struggle with making their business much more social, it starts with awareness. They don't know what they don't know.
So we start with awareness. They don't know what they know. They can call you. They can get on and start getting around there. But you'll walk them through the steps of what they need to know and really help. So, because there's so much noise out there.
There is. And I'd love to say, Dave, here's the exact four steps. But what you'll find is it's different with every company. Because depending on where they're at in the process, depending on have they used any of the social tools in the past, where are their executives? A lot of their executives don't have a clue what Twitter is. You know, they've seen that Verizon commercial with the son and the dad sitting on the deck and the guy's tweeting and they wonder, how the hell would I ever use that?
Yeah.
Well, you wouldn't use it that way, but you'd have to use it from a business perspective. So we would define goals. We would define social objectives. We would look at it, not only how would you use that to promote your business, but more importantly, how are you going to help your business users start incorporating those hooks and those tools within their applications?
How can people get a hold of you? What's your website and contact information?
Website is www.nextleveladvisors. There is no T, so it's NEXLEVEL, advisors is plural, .com. Contact us. We would welcome the opportunity to talk to you. We want to give back to the mortgage industry. If we can help out in any way, we would be more than happy to do so.
You've got a lot of resources out there. You write regularly for Progress and Lending.
We do. We're very active in social media. We write for Progress and Lending. We try to share that. You can go to the Progress and Lending app. So if you're on an iPad and you want to find out more of this information, if you want to share it, all of those hooks are already put within that. We also are very active on Twitter. You can follow Next Level Advisor. Advisor is singular. We have over 10,000 followers on Twitter.
10,000?
Yes, 10,000 followers. So we practice what we preach. We try to get a lot of great content out there to help any way that we can.
Man, we're going to have you back. I can promise you that very soon. Thank you so much, Michael. Appreciate you being here.
Dave, thank you. It was a pleasure.
Throughout the conference, we're hearing a lot about social media. Michael talked about it. And now our next guest is going to talk to us about social media and the importance of it in marketing. We have a special guest here with us today, Judy Margaret, and she's with The Turning Point. She's a veteran in the industry, been around a long, long time. When I look at Judy, it reminds me why so many people are in this business, because there's just something about the people that are attracted to this business. Judy, thank you so much for being here and being a part of the broadcast. Tell us a little bit about yourself. You're in the best part of the country, Sedona, Arizona, so we're in your country.
Thank you, David. It's an honor to be here with you today. And a little bit about myself. I, like you said, a veteran from the industry. Been in the industry since, hate to admit it, 1985. So
that's not that long. You're still young.
Originated, did sales management, but been around the industry, seen a lot of changes. And met a interesting co-founder of the business I'm with now, who owned a marketing agency in England, of all places, and built sophisticated technology-driven marketing systems for people like Land Rover and Volvo, big companies. And when I saw how the marketing could be automated and could free the originators and the companies up and do that, we actually created one of the first automated loyalty marketing programs and launched it in 1998.
So marketing is one of those things. A lot of people say, you know, you can't automate that. That's just impossible. But you can. Tell us about that and what is the vision? What are the principles behind your business?
Well, originally it was about like digitizing your own signature and your photograph, electronically having the data come in out of the LOS system, and it automatically wrote that handwritten thank you card and followed up every 90 days with those customers. And in 2005, we really felt that there was as technology grew, web services grew, we knew that there was going to be the need to have a web-based marketing platform. With all the, you know, changes in the web services and social media.
Marketing has changed, but it hasn't changed. So kind of give our listeners, so what hasn't changed? What do you think is staying the same? And what can be automated? And again, give us some insights to specifically how you're doing that now.
Well, one of the things I think that doesn't change about marketing is it's about relationship selling. And I think that the industry's been transaction-based pretty much. You know, we talk about deals instead of people, you know, those types of things. And actually, social media, I mean, print media, email media, texting, social media, it's all forms. It's not just one or the other or this is better than that. People can be successful with all forms.
Do you see social media changing the marketing game significantly?
I think that social media definitely plays a part. But I'll tell you a little story about a different kind of social media, even old-fashioned printing. If you send somebody, we have tracked this for many years, but automated loyalty marketing. If you just even send a communication every 90 days to your customers, think about this, and I'll do some simple math. Every customer you know knows 15 to 20 people well enough to refer you. And we do it naturally. If we go to a good restaurant or a movie, we automatically do that. And just say that you had 5,000 customers over time. That 5,000 customers reaches 75,000 people.
Wow.
So it doesn't matter. Some people, you have to respect the audience. Some people like to be communicated with via email. Some opt out. Some are on social media. Some are not. So I think you need what I call multimedia. You need to not just cast off print as old-fashioned and not do it, but you have to have a mix of some of each.
That is so interesting you say that, because I'm really fascinated with social media and some of the things that are happening. But I just received a thank you card recently, a handwritten thank you card. It blew me away, Judy, the impact that it had on me. Someone took the time, and I know how much that stamp costs now, and it's just going, they went out of their way. So what you're saying is, adopt the new, but don't forget the old.
Yeah, exactly right. I think that it's about relationships, and I think that's one of the things you love about the industry, and that I love about the industry, is it's that we care about people, and we really are trying to help them get the right loan for the right home. And when you're about that, then you have to maintain those relationships. And I think social media makes it just brings it so much closer to us. When you say 5,000 customers, if you stay in touch, you're reaching 75,000 people. And if you, advertise, that's not quite the same as a warm referral. If I say, hey, I really think you should talk to this person, they've helped me in the past, that's a different kind of business model.
So let's talk a little bit about where you see some of the marketing changing and some of the new things that are going to be impacting, and what are you recommending to the people that are using your services?
Well, with Mach 3, that's the name of the platform that we have. It's a combination. It's a marketing platform, a CRM, and it also, what we're seeing is, like with HARP 2 coming up, FHA streamlines being hot right now, people can go in and data mine their existing databases. And I think it's two things that are really important. One is speed to market. But with all the new regs, with all the new things that have come down the pike, we can't sacrifice compliance for speed to market. So our Mach 3 platform allows lenders to be able to create marketing and help the loan officers get it out speed to market. So I'm actually seeing some of the smarter lenders delivering marketing. The system will allow them to data mine, and instead of 18 or 100 people having to go in and individually do it, they'll actually data mine, create a pre-approved marketing piece, and send it out, whether it's email, print mail, or whatever, and deliver that and get great results because they're doing it on their behalf.
Let's talk a little bit as we wrap up this. Tell us about a little bit about Turning Point, where it's located, and how people can connect with you.
Okay. The Turning Point is located in Sedona, Arizona. We can be reached online at www.turningpoint.com.
Folks, you've got to meet Judy. When you're at one of these conferences, go out of your way to find the Turning Point representative, or hopefully you could connect with Judy. She's got a smile that'll just warm your heart and some really practical knowledge and experience. Thank you, Judy, so much for being with us.
Thank you, David. It's my pleasure.
It's a real honor to have you here. Thank you. A lot of people talking about social media here at the conference and how it's going to be integrated more and more into more business, more aspects of the business. Well, there's another perspective, though. Consider our next guest who sees potential. Well, I'll let her tell you about it. Our next guest is Jennifer Miller, president of Alamode and the Mortgage Solutions Division. Jennifer, good to have you here with us.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
You guys are a leader in the industry. You have over 50% of the market share. Tell the story. I love the story because I heard it a long, long time ago. And it starts with a dad who's an appraiser who's frustrated by filling out the form. So take it from there.
Yeah, well, basically, and it was 26 years ago, the current owner of the company, Dave Biggers, he was a college student going to get a degree in engineering, and his dad was an appraiser and still did everything with typewriters, actually employed extra staff just to type out all of the reports on a typewriter. And Dave was taking a computer programming class. He looked at his dad and said, hey, I can make this way better. I can automate your office. And so Dave dropped out of college. Him and a couple of buddies holed up in a room for a few months, and they wrote the first version of the Alamode WinTotal software for DOS. And that was 26 years ago. His dad took it, ran with it, increased his business, did a great job with it. Then Dave took the software and started selling it.
So originally it was just dad using it to help his build his own appraisal business. When did they realize, and what was the, do you remember the story, part of the story where the catalyst was what they going, we ought to take and do something with this?
Well, I think that he basically, Dave Biggers is it's a marketing genius. And so he looked at what he had and he knew that what was out there, which wasn't all that good and was very, very expensive, that he could turn it into something that was more retail, attainable for the small appraisal shops to purchase. And he really went after those small appraisers, the one-man shops, and just got his message out there by doing, you know, mass marketing mailers. He believed in mailing things to people's, you know, door, and really just took off. And he went regional. He like would target certain cities and go after the appraisal market in those cities. And then a really big catalyst for the company was when Windows came out.
I remember that when you guys launched the Windows product.
Yeah, we were the first software company to have a Windows version of appraisal software, and that was the first time we started to really make inroads in the market share of appraisers using appraisal software, because we were first and appraisers wanted to jump on that Windows platform.
You know, you sit and look at capturing more than 50% of a market is astounding. What do you think? Was it
people use software and they like it, they talk about it, so there was a strong word of mouth. Also, every time the GSEs made a form change, we ended up getting more and more market share because our competitors either weren't on top of the change or there were problems with it. And so we executed every one of those updates very well and were able to bring appraisers on via those changes.
A lot of people don't understand that Alamode does a lot with websites.
We actually, one of the things when you sell to small businesses, one of the things they need is a website presence. And so we built our XSites engine, which is basically a web builder. We have versions for appraisers, real estate agents, mortgage brokers. That's all specialized to their market. And, for instance, an appraiser can go in and pick and choose the pages they want, the layout, and it's they don't need to know HTML. And, honestly, with a few clicks, they can have a business website up and running. And we have, you know, anywhere between 20,000 and 25,000 appraisers that have one of those websites.
Wow, 20,000 to 25,000. On top of them using your form, you've developed a website for them. That's amazing. What do you see as far as social media and the developments of social media?
I see the biggest impact I see is actually in getting business done. Via like LinkedIn has really taken over. And I see that as the really first viable social media tool for the business person to connect with maybe their vendors or their partners and just to have relationships. I think that we're seeing such everything seems to be so relationship driven, and I know it was in the past, but I think LinkedIn gives you that kind of surrogate where you don't always have to get face to face. And so I'm really excited about that. As far as selling and advertising for us using social media, I just don't think we're there yet. I want to see where it's going to go. I think that most of the social media offerings out there are for personal use, and I'd like to see where we go on the business side. Except I am seeing a really strong consumer retail presence in social media, like people selling things on Facebook and whatnot, but haven't really seen it shape out in the business side.
A lot of people are predicting that we're going to see a lot of the business communications going that way, and especially being more integrated with the websites. What would you want our listeners to know most about Alamone?
Probably that we're not just an appraisal software company. That's where we started. That's our foundation. But we have branched out and have products for, like I mentioned, real estate agents, mortgage brokers, lenders, appraisal management companies. That's my job and Molly's job to get the word out, my marketing person to get the word out that that's not all we do. Now, we are appraisal experts, and a lot of our products are around that for that market, but we don't just sell to appraisers.
To learn more about the company, what's the website?
www.alamode.com, A-L-A-M-O-D-E.com.
Thank you so much for being with us, Jennifer. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel Trot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel Trot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel Trot can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel Trot represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel Trot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel Trot, the single source solution for your quality control needs. And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lincoln on Lending Show.
You know what's so interesting about coming to these technology conferences? You really kind of get a flavor of what's going on. Of course, the technology conference, anything that's new is being announced, and they're talking about trends, so we're picking up on some of that. And you heard three interviews of three executives. You know, when I walk away from there, those interviews, and what I've walked away from this conference so far, and again, we got two more days, I mean, today and tomorrow to go yet, so more to be learned. And by the way, we're going to be talking about this next week on the broadcast. I'll have a couple more interviews we'll be playing that I picked up here, and then also we'll be discussing my final analysis and observations from the conference. So tune in next week. We'll give you a good report at that point. So here's the two things I've walked away with. Number one is there is no major tech announcements. The other thing is, two investors walked up to me that are planning to make investments in technology companies. The other thing I walked away with so far is I've had a couple larger companies come and say, we have interest in acquiring other companies. Of course, our firm is big in M&A, mergers and acquisitions. So they approached us to see if I had any thoughts on who they should be looking at acquiring. So let's see what happens. Consolidation is definitely the thing we're going to see. And Don't anticipate any major product, new product announcements. So that's what I'm walking away with it from the conference at this point. Again, we've got 2 days, and we'll bring you an update next week on the broadcast with a couple more interviews. So, Allison, Joe, let's turn to you. What are your thoughts on what you've heard in these interviews?
Alice?
Okay, are you there now?
I'm here now.
All right, sorry about that. You know, the mute button always gets in the way sometimes. Anyway, as I listened to that, I just couldn't help but think about your product, Joe, because, you know, everything seems to be about being on top of communication with the customer. And I thought it was interesting that there were two different opinions. You know, one person talked about you absolutely have to be in LinkedIn, that's the place to be, and the other person kind of going, well, I'm not 100% sure yet about where social media is going. What do you think about that, Joe? Do you guys get, I know you're there about wanting to have information fast to the consumer about rates. What about the other side of it? Do you guys get involved in the social media? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, we do. We tweet on occasion. We can't give it away, though. That's part of the issue that we have, is that our service is real-time market information, and there's a cost to acquire that, and therefore there's a cost to deliver that. But we do post on a couple blogs once a day, and provide a midday update as to what's going on in the market so far, and then we'll tweet as the morning begins to unfold. But so far we probably hadn't done enough, Alice. And part of that, I'm one of those people that Dave's guests were talking about. I don't really have a great idea as to how I can turn that into lead generating activity. And so maybe I need to get in touch with the guy that Dave was interviewing.
Right, because not just. The generation of the lead, but then being able to follow the tangible results of that, you know, that it came as a direct result of that. I think we're all still working to try and see what the results are. I think clearly you can see that there's a lot of benefit for the origination side, for those working consumer direct, for sure.
No question.
From a technology standpoint in general, though, I've been out at quite a few mortgage companies in the last month looking at different systems, and I'm still amazed as to how many companies, you know, what a wide range there is, how many are still at that level of they basically are using a loan origination software system to some basic fundamental level, really rely on Excel spreadsheets, you know, and not paperless, all the way to the companies that you walk into the office and the only reason there's any paper in there is because there's still some customers you have to print the initial disclosures and mail it out to them. Other than that, you don't see any paper. And the whole system is, you know, task-oriented, and a loan is trying to move its way through the system. What's your take on? Do you think, as an industry, more companies are to that level on paperless, or
Alice, I have mixed feelings about. I consider the move to such a reliance on automation for underwriting as having played a serious part in having helped create the issues that we're just now getting out of, and so. I know it's only the information out, it's only as good as the information in, right? But we all kind of lost our sense of what a good loan was, and we relied on a computer to tell us what it was, and that didn't work out so well. I just hope that the next time around, as we begin to implement all this, the new stuff, like you mentioned the paperless environment, hopefully there's not something coming down the road that says, well, you didn't do something right in that regard, and therefore your note's not valid.
I agree with you. I agree about that past part with the automation and the underwriting, but I don't think we've transitioned out of that yet. You know, again, the shops that I'm in, there's still that struggle of how strong is that approve eligible? right? You know, the underwriters are getting better at manually underwriting. As a matter of fact, I think they feel like they have to pretty much fully document everything in most files, especially funds to close on your purchases. But, you know, at what point do you can you trust the system anymore on debt ratio? I think is a big struggle today for underwriters, on especially some of the ones that you see get approved in the higher ranges above 50, and you know all the other layers of risks, and you get sales going, wait, but it's an approved eligible, and that means it should close. So I agree with you on that front. Well, but I think we're still in a transition period of, you know, we still get the reps and warranties with it. So manual underwriting, I think, really has to be a part of it, but we haven't been able to fully let go of the reliance on the automation.
Yeah. It's an art, not a science, right? And so you, it's hard to put a binary formula onto an art. I mean, it's you gotta figure out things, you know, from all aspects of the information. So,
The other thing I've noticed is what people don't know, because we've enabled automation to solve problems for them without them even having to know it exists. So, for example, if I'm at a company that's fully automated in issuing all the initial disclosures to the customer, I've met loan officers who've never even seen the disclosures. They're, you know, they started out in their new job. It's hit submit and it goes, and it may even be submitted by another area. They don't even see the version that's being given to the customer, and they don't know the timing requirements because they don't have to know. They don't have to know how to fill in a GFE because the computer is locked down and has to do it all. It's been an interesting thing to see what people don't know.
Yeah, but that's so important. I mean, you couldn't conduct business otherwise these days.
Right, it locks it down, and then, but then now they go to move to a different company. If they go to leave, you know, or move from a bank to a lender, or downgrade in the automation from one company to the next, and they're really finding their knowledge gaps. Or even more importantly, they're leaving to go start their own company. They think they know how to do this. Oh yeah, you just hit a button and the disclosures all go out by themselves.
Alistair, you mentioned. Yeah, what came out about Romney here recently, and his views about the mortgage interest deduction. And I was just looking at something on the internet, and Reuters identifies that was sort of one of those off mic response or comments, and they're struggling now to get back. You know, to get back on message. But I thought it was interesting that you know, Obama had his. Now Romney's got his little off mic incident one can't play that on the other.
Yeah, and I think in National Mortgage News, the reporter did kind of allude to that, you know, as we were wandering around, here's what we heard, you know, off to the side.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I guess
mm-hmm.
you have to be careful what you say no matter where you're standing, right, when you're in that position. Well, it was interesting though that you even the concept though of trying to get rid of our mortgage interest deduction. I think that's another topic as an industry. You want to just shake people and go, I don't get it. I don't understand how you can think eliminating the mortgage interest deduction can be of any help to our housing industry. And I mean, because right now, as Dave talked about a couple shows ago. He already talked about that. It's taking renters a longer time, a higher price point before they move to buying. And I think that change in the interest deduction would take that even further out.
Well, to clarify a little bit, I think what Romney's talking about is second homes and higher income earners.
Oh, that was right. That's right.
Yeah.
I forgot the second home part.
That helps.
I know, but still, aren't we going to – is that a slippery slope? We don't want them to go down it anywhere.
Well, the realtors are out in big against that, obviously. So.
Well, I always love when the realtors are on our side because they've got great pack out there. So
you don't want to be on the other side of realtors.
No. Well, what else is breaking news over there at MBS Quoteline today?
Well, it has been an amazingly quiet morning. I mean, we started out at plus 6:30 seconds from end of day Friday, and that's exactly where we are now. And it hadn't moved a lot in between. So a very quiet morning. Stocks are still down 140 points. So it's like whatever happened, happened early, and it's just been incredibly flat the rest of the day.
So what is your long-term view on the interest rates, if I can ask you to speak out beyond this week?
Well, I would have said a week ago that things looked like they were moving toward higher rates in the not-too-distant future. Obviously, we're going to move there someday, but this whole thing in Europe is concerning. And as we move forward, flights to safety are likely to occur, and when they do, it's likely coming to the U.S., and it's likely going to be government-guaranteed debt in the form of mortgage-backed securities and treasuries. So even without the Fed on this week deciding to get involved more in participating in long-term debt like treasuries or mortgages, we might see a pickup in demand just as people are you know, concerned.
Well,
and that would
I guess,
be good for mortgage rates.
Yeah, so we'll watch for that. And certainly we don't want things to turn any worse in Europe, but we'll obviously hope for a good market going forward. Anything else you want to tell the listeners before we depart for the day?
No, just have a good week.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for being on the show. Dave had to duck out and get into a meeting, so I'm going to close out today and remind you that next week he's going to be talking more about the technology conference and what he is learning there. The interviews were great, and I know he's working on scooping up some more interviews for you because, goodness knows, we all need some good technology out there. So, anyway, thank you all, and have a great week.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.